Brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio, this is Newsmakers.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. She heads a state agency responsible for the credentialing and licensing of more than 240 professions, for enforcing building codes and tracking opioid prescriptions statewide. Secretary Dawn Krim of the Department of Safety and Professional Services is also chair of the Governor's Advisory Council on Equity and Inclusion. She's been answering some criticism lately about a backlog in her agency, and she joins us today. Welcome, Secretary Krim.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So I think it's safe to say that a lot of Wisconsinites probably don't know much about the Department of Safety and Professional Services. Let's start out by you just telling us what do you think the public should know about what DSPS does?
Well, I would say in a nutshell, our agency is all about safety. We were born in 2011 through a merger of the Department of Commerce and the Department of Regulation and Licensing. So safety undergirds everything we do, whether it's inspecting, reviewing plans, plan review and building inspection, whether it is administering over 100 committee boards and councils that set the standards for all of the licensing professions that fall under our agency. And we administer over 240 occupational licenses to ensure that people have the licenses that they need in order to provide services that Wisconsinites need. That's just a nutshell.
A very diverse set of charges. As we mentioned in the opening, there has been some criticism of the agency lately. An assembly committee held a hearing talking about this backlog in occupational licensing by your agency. We want to take a listen to some testimony from that hearing. We'll be hearing from the National Social Workers chapter in Wisconsin.
In my 29 years, I've never, ever seen the backlog as bad as it is now. In the past, I generally received two or three contacts per year, mostly from out-of-state folks having difficulty being licensed. In the last year or so, it's been one to two a week. So it's been really bad. I've had members that have lost jobs they wanted to apply for because they couldn't get licensed quick enough. They weren't able to apply for jobs they wanted to do. I've had members who have been hired by agencies and then the agency expected they would get their licensure quickly. It didn't happen. They were forced to work at lower level positions, which then put a burden on other staff, and the agencies then had to put people on waiting lists because the person that they hired couldn't get licensed quick enough. I've heard from people from other states that wanted to move to Wisconsin. They've had accepted offers, but they've had to delay. And I've heard the same stories about people waiting for hours to get through on the phone, leaving messages, repeat emails.
So there was considerable testimony in that hearing. People very frustrated, waiting 6 to 9 months, in some cases over a year, to get their occupational license. People talking about being on hold and kind of having to come back to the agency to provide more and more information getting lost. Do you think this is a serious problem?
And I don't know if you're referring directly to the clip because I was not able to hear it. And so what I will share with you is our licensing process is complex, especially when it comes to social workers. Since I arrived in 2019, I knew we were short-staffed. And so licensing has been a challenge since day one, and really before day one, zero. And so I've advocated for staffing. I have looked at our process improvements. I have utilized overtime. But at the end of the day, being short-staffed and our process being a manual one and some of the complexities of our licenses, sometimes it takes us a little longer than I would like for us to take to get people licensed. My goal is to provide the level of service that our license holders are looking for. And unfortunately, giving the resources that I have at hand, it can be challenging at times.
So as we mentioned, a lot of frustration expressed during that hearing, not just in that clip, but across a variety of testimony from that day. Who do you think should take responsibility for that backlog?
Well, I think it's one of those things where we all bear some level of responsibility, because my job as the head of this agency is to request the resources, utilize the resources that I have at hand to the best of my ability, and provide the level of customer service that our customers require. I've made the request of the legislature in two budget requests in which I asked for staffing, and I received less than a third of what I requested on both occasions. We also are a program revenue agency. So I bring in enough dollars to utilize those dollars to provide the level of service that's being asked. My challenge is I am not able to utilize the fees that our customers pay to provide the service. I have to give those dollars to the legislature, to the state, and then request back using what's available to me. We bring in enough dollars. I should be properly staffed to provide the level of service and resource that our customers require. And so I say all because I'm sitting in the seat and utilizing the resources I have, but I am a very, very, very small part of the responsibility piece to it. But as a leader, I do know that all eyes are on me. So my job is to make the appropriate requests, bring in the resources, and then deploy them appropriately. I've done all that I can, given my circumstance.
And DSPS has had a considerable increase in the number of applications processed. We have a slide showing that increase from 2013 to 2021, approximately 115% increase in initial applications between 2013 and 2015. It looks like your agency processed about 57,000 initial applications, and then compared to 2019 to 2021, processed about 122,000 initial applications. When we talked to members of the legislature from that hearing, they said, well, if there was this increase and concern, how come DSPS didn't ask for federal ARPA fundings or ask for release of the $5 million that was set aside by the Joint Finance Committee to help address this problem?
You know, that is an interesting answer, because when I walked in the door in 2019, I was looking for a systemic change, systemic solution that will position the agency to do the required work with the process I have in place. So I shared, I made the request two times. I have the monies coming in. I've asked to use them. If they simply would let me utilize the fee dollars that we have coming in, I would be able to solve the challenges that we face. The third part of this that people may not be aware of is we are operating under a fully manual process. We are not automated. So when the post office was late, the applications were late. When the pandemic shut down the workforce, I had 40 essential employees in my credentialing area here on site daily doing this work. And so I would say the resources exist and are here, and I can touch them, but I don't have the authority to touch them or use them. And so the pandemic has posed a challenge, but in the numbers that you've read, when you look at the increased volume and increased demand, the request I made 3 years ago fit what you're citing.
Should one of the legislators, Chairman Sortwell, also brought up the number of DSPS employees that are either working part-time or working from home. Is that a fair criticism that maybe more of those employees should have been back in the office?
As pointed out, the employees in our credentialing area are essential employees and we're on site. I was on site most of that time during the pandemic as well. So that is not a fair assessment, because in addition to them being on site, when you think about the percentage increase you noted, on top of that, we created with this governor the emergency orders that had pandemic Act 10 healthcare licenses prioritized. So we created access to bring healthcare workers back who had been retired within 5 years or across state lines who held a license, got them licensed on top of our process to get them here to help respond to the pandemic. So in addition to the percentages that you've shared, we had the stand up another process to respond to the pandemic and to bring more resources to bear. And those workers were here on site doing that work.
Do you worry at all that this issue becomes a re-election issue for the governor, or do you think things will be better?
I think so, things will be better because, again, we're working as hard as we can. You mentioned the ARPA dollars. We have experienced some relief in that we are looking at a technological solution to move these licenses online, starting first and foremost with healthcare licenses. 72 licenses will be going online here by mid-May. So we'll be moving things forward. But this is a longstanding problem that I happen to be the leader at this time that is trying to put in a systemic solution to it.
So you mentioned the online system. I think it's going online May 16th.
Yes.
What will that look like? And when do we actually think it will show, or how has it showed relief in other states that are using a similar process?
So what it will look like is the applicant will be able to actually upload their information and make their application intake and request online at their homes or wherever they are. Right now, that application gets mailed to us or faxed. Who's faxing? Faxed to us so that we can actually input the information. But they will, in real time, after they place their license application online, will be able to look in real time and chart their application progress. There's also many third-party documents and exams that need to go into the system that go into licensing. They will be able to see when their licensing exam score is posted, and it will go right to the system. They will be able to see when any third-party documentation comes in. They will be able to see it. So it will change the way this work is done and how, in real time, applicants will be able to follow along the process to see how their application is moving.
So it should have a pretty immediate effect then in terms of relief.
It'll have an immediate effect in terms of people being able to notice how their application is moving. We still will adjudicate the application, verify what information is in, have to do legal reviews if a legal review is warranted. So there are still steps, of course, on our end, but it will enable our staff to be freed up to focus on that adjudication process rather than the front end of intake, ensuring the paper, scanning things in and putting into the computer.
So recently, I'm sure you know, the Joint Legislative Council, which is a body in the legislature that recommends study committees, recommended a study committee, a couple that address the DSPS processes, but one specific to occupational licenses. Do you think that there should be some legislative changes overall in the area of occupational licensing?
Well, I think it's always important to evaluate the process, procedures, and licensing that's in place because times change, innovations happen, and you need to make space for it. And in making space for it, it's important to know where you're starting. And so I welcome the study because what it does too is it enables us in yet another way to demonstrate some of the process improvements that we've identified that are not within our purview. So it allows us to work collaboratively with the study committee to make recommendations to move licensing forward. And we have seen results in other states. So we think, too, that an evaluation is warranted and would help everyone be transparent about what exists and what improvements could be recommended and then implemented.
You know, another big initiative that you have been working on, as we mentioned in the introduction, is your role as chair on the Governor's Advisory Council on Equity and Inclusion. Just to provide our viewers with an overview of that, it was created by executive order in November 2019. There were 30 members that were named in February of last year. It has a charge to advise the governor on ways to improve equity and inclusion for Wisconsinite across sectors. And in your next meeting, you have a series of subcommittees that will be sharing some work plans. Can you give us a kind of a preview on what we might expect?
Well, I'm excited about that work. This is a governor that has been supportive of equity and inclusion work since long before becoming governor. And it's work that is near and dear to my heart because I have been someone that has looked for opportunities for all and ways to be more inclusive in the workplace. And so I'm excited about leading this work alongside the governor with these 30 experts from around the state who are doing this very work in their day work. And they are going to provide ideas and support to state government on how it can be more equitable. So there are three subcommittees that are doing this work. The three subcommittees are community engagement, data and policy, and economic and business development. And so that community engagement subcommittee's charge is to create and sustain an environment that regularly scans for, recognizes, and celebrates diversity, equitable and inclusive practices and initiatives all around the state. And so what they are going to focus on is shining a bright light on the good work that's happening around the state that celebrates diversity that can be acknowledged. So because many times we have a lot of historical events that are celebrated, and maybe there are new ones that should be recognized. And this committee is wanting to highlight and celebrate what's happening in all 72 counties. And so their work plan will be posted to the Equity and Inclusion Council's website here after the May meeting, so stay tuned for that. The Data and Policy Committee is looking at how are policies that are currently in place in state government inclusive in terms of building a more diverse workplace. How are people hired? What is that process? So they are evaluating a lot of HR practices and looking at belonging, not just are they qualified, but once hired, looking at retention, how to help employees belong. So you'll see more details around that. And then that third subcommittee is looking at economic development. And what they are looking at is how and who is the state buying from? Who are the suppliers? And when you look at who and how they're buying, what is the criteria set up to ensure that people who are supplying are in the game, especially women and veterans alongside diverse suppliers, how to ensure that they too engage in this economic development. And so stay tuned because after the May meeting, we will post those action plans, those the guiding statements, no longer draft, and what we will be doing going forward. So thank you for asking about that important work, but we are excited about it.
You mentioned your data and policy subcommittee, and I know that they recently looked at the state's affirmative action plan to kind of understand where the state is as an employer in the representation of people of color. And they found that that report says an underrepresentation of people of color across many categories, some concentration in specific employment groups, and then a significant drop in employment of Native and Alaskan Indian employees in state government. How do you think the state can be a better employer of people of color?
Well, I think first and foremost, what they are beginning to discover and what we've discovered here at our agency is over time, there has been kind of a formulaic approach to state government that unfairly, I think, supports those who actually have some state government experience. So if you're in the door, you know the lingo, you know the terminology. There are some things already inherently in place that I think sometimes affirms those who are already in, making it very difficult for those to break in. And so if you look at the percentage of numbers of the state workforce right now, it is overwhelmingly Caucasian or majority culture. And so if you're already advantaging those who are already in the system, it makes it even that much harder to get in. So looking at removing some of that advantage that's in the current process so that it's more open to skill set, past experience, so that people are able to get in the door, that will, I think, open the door a little wider for diverse populations, especially Native and Asian Americans and Latinas and African Americans.
Moving on to another topic from your agency. I know that you also deal with building codes, and the Wisconsin Realtors Association has said that regulation in the area of building codes has driven up the cost of single family housing, multifamily housing by 30%, and that there should be some regulatory reform. Do you think that there needs to be regulatory reform?
Well, I think what's happening is unfortunately, our building code standard where we are as a state has lagged. So this year, we have just updated our commercial building code that will take us from the 2015 to the 2021. And we are confident that within that update, there is going to be some innovations and some space for more efficiencies that the public is asking for and others are asking for. And one of those new spaces, if you will, in our update of the building code is we are including mass timber guidelines. That is a new technology that we believe will take advantage of some of the industries here in the state of Wisconsin. Our paper industry, wood, we have forest. And so why not take advantage of that? And one prime example is the Ascent building in Milwaukee. It will have the advantage of being the highest and tallest mass timber project in the world when it opens.
We have a picture of that that I'll put up while you're talking. Please continue talking about that.
Very good. But the current building codes actually do not make space for this innovation and this technology. So variances had to be gotten from the city of Milwaukee and the fire department. And we are working with that with a mass timber task force that we created that will create guidelines that will enable those types of buildings to come to bear in the state of Wisconsin more easily because the code and these guidelines will make space for it. So what I'm here to share is innovation is good. Updated codes are safer codes for all of us. And by us moving and adopting the more recent code, we as a state will be in a better place.
Another area that I know DSPS works in is around opioid prescriptions. Recently, the governor signed a series of bipartisan bills designed to curb opioid use in the state. Your agency's had a part in that as well. Can you talk a little bit about the prescription drug monitoring program and kind of the new investments that are being made in that?
Absolutely. We are excited to administer the prescription drug monitoring program. We do this work in partnership with the Wisconsin Controlled Substances Board. And so what our PDMP, it's called for short, does is it enables prescribing data from pharmacists, doctors, and others who prescribe opioids to input their subscription history in place so that in real time, people can actually look at our dashboard visualizations and see what has been prescribed, how much, and where. And what that has done over time is it has limited the amount of prescription drug available in our communities. And it focuses primarily on prescribing exactly what is needed and reduces overprescribing. What that does is it gives real-time information for doctors so that when they're talking with their patients who are utilizing these pain medications, to really have a good dialogue about what's going on to ensure that they have exactly what they need and not more than that. Unfortunately, in the past, there was some incidences of doctor shopping across the border from Minnesota, Illinois, and other places. The PDMP allows real-time information about what is available in the system and how much is available to patients. With our new updates with the PDMP, we are pleased to share that we've received funding from the Department of Justice that will enable us to reduce all fees or costs with utilizing the system for our healthcare partners so that there is access and even access across the state for public health, tribal health, anyone that is utilizing the tool, they will have it available free of charge.
That sounds like one of a main accomplishment over your last 3 years. I'd like to ask you, you know, you were appointed by Governor Evers 2019, confirmed by the legislature just last year. What do you see as one of your main accomplishments over these last 3 years?
Thank you for asking. I am so pleased and thrilled to talk about another major technology project that we undertook walking in the door, and that is our electronic licensing area when it comes to construction. So when I walked in the door, our plan review process was also manual. A lot of plans being mailed around to our five different offices to be reviewed by plan reviewers. We have now moved that process electronic, and we are reviewing plans and getting them out of the door within 6 weeks. When I arrived, we were upwards to almost 10 weeks on plan review processes. And that was in building and plumbing and other areas. Now our areas are within 6 weeks. And we've been able to hold that all throughout 2021. And we continue to hold at 6 weeks. And it's an electronic process. So the modernization that is happening at this agency is light years needed and is moving us light years ahead. So I am very proud of that particular process.
One final question to you. I was reading your bio. You came to UW-Madison 1996 as a women's basketball coach. I am wondering, do you use your coaching skills in your day-to-day work, and how?
Every day. And I would say every day, because it's about knowing what the challenge is and then moving towards solutions. So for me, the challenges that we have and the people that we have, it's game day. It's game day, and my staff is the team. And so my job as the leader is to really prioritize what we need to focus on. As you heard, there is a lot to focus on, but then to deploy the resources and make sure we have the right people in place doing what's necessary to get the systemic solution. And so I'm all about collaboration, so I'm constantly recruiting. And it's all about ensuring that me and the team do the best work we can. And so if your approach every day is game day, then you're going to either have a win or a loss, and I'm all about winning. So that's how I use it every day.
All right. Well, Secretary Krim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you to our viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.